Okay, so I think last time we left off just by talking about so today what we'll do is to talk about the perturbed Boltzmann equation. Okay, so just to remind you, recall that the unperturbed distribution function entering the Boltzmann equation, okay, at least in equilibrium, the unperturbed distribution was a thermal distribution. Okay, so unperturbed was f is only a function of energy given by 1 over e to the e over t plus or minus 1. And again, for simplicity, so here I'm suppressing the chemical potential, but in your mind, just remember that, in general, there's a, it's also allowing for a chemical potential. Okay, the key thing is that this is only a function of energy. It's not a function of like the, well, it wasn't a function of things like the direction of the momentum vector. Also not a function of position. Okay, so now when we add in perturbations, this will change. So what we're going to do is to assume that the perturbation to this distribution function is a small perturbation. Okay, so we'll write the perturbed distribution as this unperturbed distribution, okay, plus some perturbation on F1. And again, our reasoning will be that this F1 is a small change to our unperturbed distribution. Okay, and so unlike this, the unperturbed distribution, the perturbed distribution can depend in general on position, and also, in general, it can depend on the direction of the momentum vector. So recall that the Boltzmann equation governing the time evolution of this distribution, was written in this compact way as total derivative of f is this complicated collision integral.
Can I ask,
Yeah.
when are we adding the perturbation? Are we fixing some instant of time and we're saying that before that everything is normal, we're adding perturbation after that, or?
Sure, yeah, okay, yeah, okay, yeah, good, yeah. Yeah, so let's think of this again, sort of like an initial value problem. We're starting off at some very early time when perturbations are very small, say directly after inflation, okay. We'll allow for some small, tiny perturbations, and then we'll compute the evolution, the time evolution of everything, using the Boltzmann equation. Yeah. Okay, good. So this was the form of the Boltzmann equation in this very compact notation. In terms of our variables, e, p, and p hat, we can expand this out as a partial time derivative. And then a space derivative, x dt, and then energy derivative, and then similarly, dfd direction. Okay, so last time, towards the end, we had worked out explicit expressions for this and for this for particles that were following geodesics. Okay, so to remind you of what those were, actually here, I'll just write it up here. Okay, so last time we showed that for particles following geodesics, okay, dx dt took this expression. Okay, where again, this phi and this psi, they were the metric potentials. And we also showed that the energy for a particle following a geodesic obeys this. I over A. And then minus p squared over e. d phi dt. Okay, and so now what we'll do, just is to plug in these two expressions into our Boltzmann equation. Okay, Right. Okay. So we also have this term here that I haven't yet talked about, right? Okay, you know. So I mentioned this dedt, this dxdt. We also have this dfdp, dp hat, ddt term, okay? And so in principle, we could also work out dp hat dt, okay? However, though, this term in total should be really small compared to these other terms, okay? And the reason for this is that, so first of all, note that the unperturbed distribution function, f naught, it was independent of the direction p hat. Okay, so therefore this term is first order, right? Similarly, for the unperturbed universe, the direction that a particle follows also doesn't change. So this term is also first order. So therefore the product is second order and is therefore small compared to the other terms. Okay, and so therefore to first order, we can neglect this piece. Okay. Okay, good. Right. Similarly, in this dfdx, dxdt term, okay? So again, recall that the unperturbed distribution f had no spatial dependence. Okay, so therefore this dfdx is first order. So therefore we only keep the zeroth order parts of this dxdt, okay? But you can see that there are zeroth order terms, i.e. just dropping phi and psi. Okay, so in total and plugging everything in, what we get is the following, maybe somewhat lengthy expression that I'll write out. Okay, so dfdt works out to partial f, partial t, plus partial f dxi. And now plugging in for dxdt, we get p hat I over ae minus dfde. P hat I over A partial psi partial x squared over E H plus d phi dt. Okay, so all I've done just is to plug in those expressions for dedt dxdt. Okay, good. So then this will be our, the left-hand side of the Boltzmann equation, okay? And so now what we can do, like before, is to take moments of the Boltzmann equation to derive fluid equations. Okay, so before we had done this for the, you know, for the unperturbed universe. Now we'll just repeat that same line of reasoning now, allowing for perturbations. And so like before, we'll start off by taking moments of the collisionless Boltzmann equation, where we set the collision term on the right-hand side to zero, okay? So we'll start off setting this all to zero. After working out the collisionless moments, we'll then allow for collisions. Okay, so now what we'll do is to take moments of this equation. Okay, and so by moments, all I mean just is taking the integral of this equation over all possible momenta. Okay. So yeah, okay, so now what we'll do is to take the integral of all of this over all possible momenta. Okay, so last week I think that, we had done the same thing again for the unperturbed universe. Okay, so we have a whole bunch of terms, so let's now do this term by term. Okay, so our first term is this dfdt. So let's take the integral of dfdt over all possible momenta. Okay, and so what will this give? Do you guys remember? Okay, do you guys remember what the integral of the distribution function over all momenta was? Sorry? Number density. So therefore, what will this be? Yeah, exactly. D and dt, okay, at location x. Okay, now, okay, next let's do the second term, this piece here. Okay, so this is integral df dxi of p hat I over ae integrated over all velocities, over all momenta. Okay, I can pull out the a from the integral. I can also pull out the partial derivative with respect to x from the integral, okay, giving me 1 over a d by dx of the integral of f p hat over e over 2 pi cubed. Okay, so this p amplitude, p scalar times p hat direction looks like a momentum vector. Momentum vector over energy looks like a velocity. Okay, so this looks like the integral of velocity over all possible, over all possible states weighted by the number of states. Okay, and so this looks like something like number density times a mean velocity. Right? Okay. So therefore, I will define this integral, okay, to be number density times mean velocity. Okay.
Wait, why is that okay to do to just define it as that?
Well, so how would you define a mean velocity overall, over some set of particles, right?
Add up all velocities divided by the number of particles.
Right. And so therefore, number times that would be the sum over all the velocities, which is what this is, right?
But then is that a definition, or is that just like
I am defining this, the velocity this way, the fluid velocity, yeah.
In a FLR universe, this would have been zero, so
yes.
This velocity V is of the first order.
Exactly, that's right. Yeah, that's right. And yeah, exactly. Okay, right. So this is the first order velocity perturbation relative to the mean Hubble expansion of the universe. Okay.
I'm still a bit confused.
Okay.
Are there other ways to define it that would be like equally valid but wouldn't capture what we're trying to capture?
Are there other ways to define? Well, this is the intuitive way, I think, that you would define what is the average velocity over some set of particles.
I'm still having a bit of trouble figuring out why it's a definition rather than just saying it must be this.
Well, we haven't said what is the fluid velocity, right? We've just written down the velocities for individual particles. And so now what I'm doing is to define fluid quantities from the set of all particles, right? So we define the number density of the fluid, the energy density of the fluid, the momentum density of the fluid. So, okay, so similarly here, we can intuitively think of what is the mean velocity of this parcel of fluid.
Okay.
Yeah, and the way that you would, I think, do it just is to add up all the particles in that region, yeah. Again, so think of these as phase space coordinates. Yeah, that's right. Okay. Right, so this function f is a function of spatial coordinate x. It's also a function of the momentum coordinate p. Okay, and for particles of a given m, if you know p, you also know the energy e. Yeah. Okay, good. Any other questions before we go on? Okay. So since we define this integral to be n times the bulk velocity, then all of this just looks like 1 over a divergence of nv. Okay? Good. Okay, next term. So we've done this and this. Now let's do these other terms. Okay, so the next term looks like minus d psi dx integral of df dE p hat I over a integrated over all possible momenta. Okay, right, so you can see why it's okay for me to pull this from, you know, I mean, pull this out and pull this to outside the integral, right? Okay, so note that this is already first order in the perturbations. Okay, so therefore we should use the zeroth order distribution function here, okay, to be first order. Okay, good. And again, remember the zeroth order distribution function depended only on energy E. It didn't depend on the direction of the momentum p hat. Okay. Good. So now I can imagine now doing this integral. Okay. Good. So now what I'll do is to write this as p squared dp d p hat. Okay. And now let's imagine doing the p hat integral first. Okay, what does that give?
C0.
It gives zero, and why?
Because pi goes from minus infinity to plus infinity.
I have an odd number of these p hats integrated over all possible directions, and therefore it vanishes. Okay, good. Okay, good. So therefore, to first order, this piece vanishes when that piece vanishes when we take the moment of the Boltzmann equation. Okay, and then finally, then we have this last piece here. Okay, so that piece looks like, again, minus integral of df dE. E squared over E H plus D phi DT, and then again integrated over D3P. So again, I can just pull out this term from the integral. So let me do that, minus H plus D phi DT, and then the rest of it, integral DF DE. P squared over E D3P. Okay, so now we can simplify this integral a little bit by noting that partial F partial E I can write as partial F partial P times DP DE. And dp dE is just E over P, right? So this is just E over P times partial F partial P. Okay? So let me replace df dE with this. So I get df dP multiplied by E over P. Okay, so this E cancels, one P cancels, leaving me with just P. Are people with me so far? Yeah? Okay, good. So now again, let's now expand out this D3P into P squared DP D angle apart, DP hat. Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3 powers of P, right? DF DP. All right, so now let's do this, the P integral by parts. Okay? So doing that will give me minus sign. Okay, this DFTP turns into just F. And then I take the P derivative of this, which is 3P squared DP. Okay? So far, so good?
Wait,
Wait, sorry, I was thinking about the last part.
Sure, sure.
Where the minus sign went.
Yeah, so yes, what I did was to take, so what I did was to do the p integral by parts.
Okay.
Okay, right. All right, so that flips the sign, and then moves the p derivative over to the other term. Okay, so now I have p squared d squared p hat, which again is just d3p. Okay, so let me just write it that way again. And I'll pull the 3 out, because it's just a number. Okay, and then what is this integral? Yeah, the number density, right? Okay, so let me just spare some room, just write this as n. Okay, good. So good. So now we've worked out all the terms. Okay. So let's just write. Okay. So now, yeah. So let's combine everything together. So combining everything, what we get is dn dt. Okay. And then we have this term, 1/a divergence. Of nv plus 3 h plus d phi dt times number density, all this equals 0. Okay, good. So this is our final expression for the continuity equation for the number. Okay, good. Right. But again, this is a perturbed version of the continuity equation. So if you recall, the unperturbed version that we got before, previously that said dn dt plus 3hn was 0, okay, unperturbed. Okay, you know, and then this then gave us the behavior that the number density just, you know, dilutes like 1/a. So here, this looks very similar to this, right? So we have this term appearing, this term appearing. But now we also have two other terms also as well, okay? So first we have this term that looks like the divergence of the number flux, okay? And again, okay, right, you know, so our x coordinate, the spatial coordinates x are co-moving coordinates. So therefore this is a co-moving derivative. The 1/a then makes it a proper physical derivative, okay? So what we have is that the number density, you know, depends on the divergence of a number flux, which again should make sense physically, right? Okay, good. The only then leftover new term is this piece here. Okay, this 3 d phi dt times n. Okay, so that piece is totally new compared to compared to before. It's a purely relativistic piece, but it's easy to understand physically where this comes from. Oh, yeah.
Could you explain again why it was n0 in the second term?
Why is it n0, not n?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, it is n, but v is first order.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. And therefore, then I'm dropping the second order piece to write n0. Yeah, but yeah, you're right. It is n, but again, yeah. Okay, good.
Also, like for the term h plus rho phi d, like I understand the calculation, but like intuitively, I expect Hubble acceleration and like gravitational acceleration act in opposite direction. So like I expect one of them should be like the minus, you know, act in the opposite way. Like one of them get a minus, ways in like that. I mean,
yeah.
My intuition is not true. I don't see it here. Like I expect that Hubble's expansion tries to like dilute the n, but like
uh-huh.
Gravitational interaction tries to like, you know, act in opposite.
Oh, good. Okay, good. I think you're asking about, you know, what about gravitational accelerations?
Yes.
Yes.
It's going to be that front phi.
And so gravitational accelerations, they will enter into the time derivative of the velocity field. Right. So you're right that this will have terms that depend on, you know, the space derivatives of these potentials. That's right.
So it's not that term of partial phi, partial e, that term.
That is, yeah, this is a time derivative.
Yeah, yeah,
Not a space derivative. Yeah, so it's not a gravitational acceleration. That's right. Okay, good. But then why does this term appear? Okay. Okay, good. So the physical way to think about this is the following. Okay, you know, so recall that the spatial part of our perturbed metric looked like the following, right? So I had this a squared 1 plus 2 phi delta ij dxi dxj term. Okay, so the point is that this metric potential affects the local volume of space, okay? Just like the scale factor affects the local volume of space. And so in the same way that the time derivative of the scale factor, h, okay, dilutes, okay, the same way this time derivative also affects the time derivative of n, okay, you know, again, just because both of these are affecting the local volume of space, okay? Okay, good. So good. So now we've worked out the continuity equation for the number of particles without any collision term. Okay, and you know one example of a species that is pretty close to collisionless is dark matter. Okay, and so therefore this equation should hold pretty well for the evolution of the dark matter density.
Also, just like something else, the term that has a psi, it disappears for every cases. Means that like whatever curvature perturbation we put in the theory, it's going to disappear in a way that it's not going to affect number density.
It doesn't affect the first order time evolution of the number density, but as we'll see in a few moments, it will affect the time derivative of the velocity or the momentum field.
But that's not true Boltzmann equation. What else we have? Like we're going to solve like Friedman perturbed field.
We will show that using the Boltzmann equation. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But just bear with me for a couple of minutes. Yeah. Okay, good. But before doing that, let me just define one piece of common notation. Okay. So normally instead of working with the perturbed number density n, it's more common to work with a quantity called the overdensity. Okay, so the overdensity will define the following way. It's equal to the unperturbed density times 1 plus delta. Okay? And so if we now plug this into here, okay, you can show that the evolution equation for delta is very similar. It's d delta dt plus 1 over a divergence of velocity. Plus 3 d phi dt equals 0. Okay? All right, good. So any questions about the fluid equations for the number density field? Yeah?
Throughout this analysis, we've been ignoring tensor variations.
Yes, that's right.
So,
yeah, that's right. Yeah, so we could add, besides the metric potentials phi and psi, we could also have tensor perturbations. Yeah. So if you do so, you know, what you find is that to lowest order, these sort of scalar perturbations to first order don't depend on those tensor perturbations. Yeah. So if you're curious, you can work through that as an exercise. Yeah.
So for the overdensity, how come the Hubble parameter disappear?
Good. It'll wind up disappearing once you subtract off this.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, okay, good. I mean, like, well, you know, in your homework, you'll see an example of something like this. Yeah, okay. Well, yeah, I mean, hopefully. Okay, so that was the number density. Now, for the Friedman equations, we don't want the number density, we want the energy density, the pressure, and so on, okay? And so we could do the exact same line of reasoning, you know, to derive fluid equations for the energy density and for the pressure and so on. I will spare you all from doing that. To be clear, I won't spare you from doing it. Instead, my plan was to give you the opportunity to do that yourself in the homework, okay? But the line of reasoning is the exact same as this, okay? So hopefully if you followed this, it'll be extremely straightforward for you to derive the analogous equations, for the density. For the energy density, okay? And so if you do so, is it okay if I erase this? Yeah, okay, so if you do so correctly, what you should show in your homework is the following. Okay, so what you'll find is that in in this same conformal Newtonian gauge, what we get is the following evolution equation for the energy density: d rho dt is 1 over a divergence of momentum flux plus 3 h plus d phi dt. Rho plus p equal to 0, okay? Where this q is the, is the momentum flux, okay, analogous to this number flux nv, okay? Okay, so again, the physical interpretation of all these terms should be clear, okay, right? So again, the rate of change of the local energy density should depend on the divergence of some momentum flux, okay? We also have this same, 3h, 3h plus d phi dt for rho as we had before for the number. We also have this new term of p times all of this, okay? And the way to think about this is that this corresponds to the PdV work being done on, on this fluid as universe expands. Okay? Good. And then similarly, we could then write the overdensity, evolution equation. So if we write rho is equal to rho naught 1 plus delta, okay? Now to define the overdensity for the energy, plugging this into here, then what we get is d delta dt plus 1 plus w. One over a divergence of v plus three d phi dt plus 3h and then c s squared minus w delta is equal to 0, where w is this w. Okay, so it says W is the equation of state parameter that we saw before. This W is defined as P over rho. And then CS is the sound speed. Okay, so CS is defined as dP d rho. Okay? Now for particles that are non-relativistic, okay, so for particles that are moving very slowly, the pressure is tiny compared to the energy density, so W is small, CS squared is small, okay? And so if we set W and CS to 0, okay, this term goes away, this 1 plus W becomes 1, and then the evolution equation for the energy over density is the same as the equation for the number over density, okay? And that should make sense, right? Because again, for particles that are non-relativistic, right, so for non-relativistic particles, the energy density is just the rest mass times the number, okay? And therefore, the overdensity in energy density is just the same as the overdensity in the number.
Wait, sorry, I think I missed it when you said it. So the other one with the number density, we derived by setting this full derivative df dt equal to 0. This one, it's derived by is it dE dt?
Okay, so good. So we derived this expression by taking the Boltzmann equation and then taking the, taking the integral over all possible momenta. Mm-hmm. Okay? We use that to derive the evolution equation for the moment n, which is just the integral of f over all possible momenta. Mm-hmm. Okay. If we instead wanted to compute the energy density rho from the distribution function, what would that be? It'll be some integral over f.
Times like the energy.
Times the energy, right? d3p. Okay. And so to derive this equation, what you'll do is to take the Boltzmann equation, multiply by e, and then take the integral over all possible momenta. Again, it's the exact same chain of reasoning that we used here, the same tricks about taking, you know, partial integrals and so on. Yeah. Okay, so hopefully it should be extremely straightforward. Okay, good. So now we have this expression for the time evolution of the perturbed energy density. Okay. Note that the evolution of rho depends on the divergence of this quantity, the momentum flux q. I didn't write it down, but this q field is just rho plus p times the velocity. Okay. So therefore, this equation on its own doesn't fully specify the future evolution, right? Because to know how rho evolves over time, we have to know how this q evolves over time. Okay. So to get that, we have to know what is dq dt. Actually, these are partials. Okay, so then how do we derive that? We can do so just by taking higher moments of the Boltzmann equation. Okay, so here what we've done is to take the Boltzmann equation, multiply by e, and then take the integral over all possible momenta. We can derive an equation for this momentum flux instead just by taking the Boltzmann equation, multiplying by e, and also by the momentum, something like that. Okay, does that make sense? Okay, all I mean just is that you can insert powers of the momentum vector. Okay, so if you like, the continuity equation is like the zeroth order moment of the Boltzmann equation because there were zero powers of the velocity or the momentum field. Okay. You can derive evolution equations for the momentum flux by taking like the first order moment of the Boltzmann equation involving one power of the velocity, one power of the momentum. Okay. And so in your homework, you'll do that. And you can then derive an equation governing the time evolution of the momentum field. Okay, and so what you'll show is that the following equation holds. Okay, so what you will hopefully show is that dq dt plus 4hq. Actually, here, I'll write these as with indices j. Plus 1 over a d by d xi tij plus 1 over a d psi d xi tij plus rho delta ij. All of this equals zero. Okay, so what are these? Okay, so this T is just the spatial part of the stress energy tensor. Okay, it's the stress tensor. Okay, it's the exact same stress energy tensor that we saw before in the Friedmann equations. All right. And before we had seen, that this stress energy tensor, corresponds to, to the second moment of the distribution function. Okay, good. So now we have an evolution equation for the momentum flux, which we needed, to solve for the time evolution of the energy density. Okay, but now we have a problem again. So you guys see the problem?
Still need QI too.
Sorry?
We still need the initial momentums as well.
Well, so let's suppose that we have initial conditions. Okay, right. But now to evolve forward in time, okay, what's the problem we have? Okay, right, you know, so before, you know, we had derived this evolution equation for the energy density. The problem we had was that this divergence of this momentum flux entered, okay, so to have a complete set of equations, we needed to know the evolution equation for the momentum flux. We derived that, right? We got this expression, okay? So now do we have a complete set of equations to solve for all future evolution? Yes, what's missing? We have a divergence of the second moment of the distribution function, the stress energy. So therefore, to get a complete set of equations, we have to know how that evolves over time. Okay? Now, since this, stress tensor is just a second moment of the distribution function, okay, we could derive, we could derive the evolution equation for the stress tensor, again, just by taking the second moment of our Boltzmann equation. Okay, what will happen, you think, if we do that?
Force moment.
What's that?
Afterward, we need force moment.
Exactly, okay, exactly. There will be some term that's like, you know, the divergence of some third moment, qijk, okay? So then we then have to get, you know, d by dt of this, and then involve the fourth moment, and so on, okay? And so you can see the problem we have is that, generically, this procedure will give us this infinite hierarchy of evolution equations. And the hierarchy is called the BBGKY hierarchy. Okay. So to get a closed set of equations, we need some way to truncate this this hierarchy. So in fluid dynamics, what's done is to close this hierarchy by invoking an equation of state for the fluid. Okay. You know, so what's done is to just invoke some equation of state, so all that means, just is some expression for this stress tensor, okay, so we write this stress tensor just as some function of things like the energy density and the temperature, okay, and so normally in fluid dynamics, actually even simpler, what's done is to assume that the stress tensor is isotropic, described just by some pressure, okay, so the pressure is just assumed to be some function of the energy density and the temperature, okay. The details of this unspecified function will depend on the collisions governing, these species. Okay, and so therefore, very soon we will talk about collisions next. Okay, but before doing that, let me just briefly mention one other possible way to close this hierarchy. The other way to close the hierarchy is to assume that the particles are all very, very cold. Okay. So specifically for the cold dark matter model, okay, what's done is to assume that that these moments vanish. Okay, so we assume that Tij is zero, the pressure is zero, and so on. Okay, that then closes the hierarchy. Okay, so this term vanishes. For example, this term vanishes. Okay. So if we do so, this momentum flux evolution equation can be written in the following simpler way. Okay, so you can show that for cold dark matter, the velocity field evolves in the following way, dv dt. Plus HV plus 1 over A grad psi equals 0. Okay? Right. And so again, hopefully all these terms make sense, right? So in the absence of gravitational perturbations, velocities just redshift away. Okay? However, though, gravitational accelerations can source velocity fluctuations. Okay, good. All right, okay, good, yeah, okay, good. So so these are the fluid equations for particles that are collisionless, okay? So these expressions should hold really well for species like dark matter. Also for neutrinos, at least following weak freeze-out. Okay. However, though, besides dark matter and neutrinos, there are other species as well. Okay, things like photons and baryons, and they are not collisionless. They have collisions. Okay, and so next, what we'll do then is to talk about the photons and baryons. So yeah, maybe I'll keep this and then erase the rest. Okay, so questions while I'm erasing, or?
Just using this, we have this hierarchy problem, but like something doesn't make sense, because like if there's going to be a hierarchy problem even without perturbation, we needed to see this, because like, I mean, if you don't have enough conditions, enough initial conditions, it should also be true without perturbing the equations.
Well, I mean, so if we have an unperturbed universe, then we fully specified the initial conditions, right? Sorry, I mean, perhaps I'm not following what you're asking.
I'm not following what I'm asking. It doesn't matter, I ask later. I should.
Oh, okay, all right. Further questions? Well, we're late, okay. Okay, so next we'll talk about photons and baryons. Okay, so again, the only difference here for the photons and baryons is that they have collisions, and so this collision integral, the right-hand side, for a Boltzmann equation, doesn't vanish anymore. Okay, the left-hand side, though, is still the exact same. Okay, so therefore, all the same fluid equations that we derived will still hold. The left-hand sides will all be the same. Okay, just the right-hand side now will have some source term. Okay. For number density, for energy density, for momentum, all of those things. Okay. Okay. Good. So therefore, we'll have similar equations, for things like the baryon, energy density, as a function of time. Okay. Similarly for the photons. However, though, conventionally, we don't describe the photon perturbations in terms of energy density, like delta. Okay. So instead, conventionally, what's done is to describe the photon perturbations in terms of their temperature fluctuations, as opposed to their density fluctuations. Okay. So for photons, okay, so instead of using delta rho over rho, normally we use delta T over T. And the reason, of course, for this, is that for the observed CMB, this delta T over T, is just what we observe on the sky. Okay, so therefore, next let's rewrite our equations in terms of temperature fluctuations for the photons. Okay, so before, recall that we wrote our distribution function, the perturbed distribution function, as the unperturbed plus some small perturbation. Okay. But to remind you, so for photons, the unperturbed distribution function was just the Bose-Einstein distribution. Okay, so for photons, the F naught was 1 over e to the e over t minus 1, right? Okay, now we could write a general F1, okay, but instead, what I'll do is to generalize this expression the following way. Okay, so for photons, I'll define their distribution function as f as a function of position, momentum, time. Okay, so I'll write it as 1 over e to the e. I'm gonna get some more room. E over t 1 plus theta. Minus 1, okay? Where this theta is some function of position, momentum, and time, Okay. This is a completely equivalent way to write the perturbation as our previous expression. Okay, so for example, you know, I can derive F1 in terms of theta, right? So you can see that, you know, so our previous small perturbation F1 is, you know, approximately equal to the FD theta times the theta perturbation, right? Which is minus E over 1 plus theta dFdE times theta, which is approximately E dFdE theta, assuming that theta is small compared to 1, okay? A small temperature perturbation, okay? So therefore, we can represent any possible perturbed distribution function in terms of this temperature perturbation, theta, delta t over t. Okay? Good. Right, how much time? Okay, good. So to remind you, our original Boltzmann equation had the following form. So df dt plus df dxi p hat over AE minus df dE p hat d psi dx plus p squared over E h plus d phi dt. Okay, now we're focusing on photons, and for photons, P is equal to E, right? Okay, so therefore I can just remove all of the P over E ratios. Okay, so this goes away. This goes away. Actually, what I'll do is to write it as E instead of P. Okay, so. Okay, good. Everyone with me so far? Okay, so then next thing that I'll do is to replace F everywhere in here with F naught plus the small perturbation. Okay, so doing that is gonna, so now plugging this in for F is going to give us a whole slew of terms. So I'm wondering if I should go through this or not. Maybe what I'll do just is to write it out at least one time. So you all see that at least one time. Okay, so we get d by dt of f naught minus e df dE. Okay, first term. Plus d by dxi. Okay, times p hat over a. That's it. Okay. Then we have then all this stuff. P hat over a. D psi dx plus h plus d phi dt. E df dE. Oh, sorry. D by dE of okay, so we have this whole slew of terms. Okay, So now how do we make progress with this? So what we'll do is to first recall the zeroth order equation without perturbations. Okay, so without perturbations, this would become df dt minus h e df naught de, okay, equals zero. It equals zero because we are in equilibrium early on, right? And so in equilibrium, the forward reactions balance the reverse reactions, and so therefore, on average, the collision term vanishes. Okay? So therefore, these same terms in this perturbed equation will also sum to zero. Okay? Good. So therefore, the unperturbed terms here will vanish. Okay? Now, besides the unperturbed terms, we have a whole million set of perturbed terms, okay? So there are terms involving theta, there's terms involving like derivatives of theta, and also terms that are independent of theta, okay? First let's look at the terms that are just something times theta, the temperature perturbation, okay? So which of those terms exists. Well, let's just write all of them down. Okay, so for example, we'll have a term that looks like d by dt of this stuff multiplied by theta, right? So we'll have a term that looks like theta, and then all of that reduces to minus e d by dt of df naught de. Okay, another term that we'll have looks like, for example, this d by de acting on this multiplied by theta. Right. So we also have a term that looks like plus. So we have an h e d by de of e f naught d. Okay, and I stipulate that these are all of the terms. Okay, so do you guys agree with that? That these are all the terms that just multiply theta without theta derivatives? So for example, there's also like this term here, d by dx of this times theta times p hat. Okay, why is that term not present?
Zero is uniform.
I can't hear you. Exactly right. So did you all hear that? Right. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Right. Yeah. So this is spatially independent. So therefore, the derivative of this and this vanishes. Okay. What about, for example, these like phi and psi terms?
They're all second order.
Sorry. Yeah, second order, exactly, that's right. Okay, yeah, exactly. So theta already is first order, so therefore, at first order, there cannot be any terms involving, first order quantities. Okay, good. So therefore, these are all the terms that involve, theta by itself without any, without any derivatives. Okay, so in this first term, d by dt, d by de, we can change the order of the partial derivatives because they commute. Okay, so this minus e d by dt is also the same as minus e d by de of df naught dt. Right? And we also know that df naught dt obeys this equation. Okay, So this df naught dt is actually just the same as he df naught de. Okay, so therefore the term multiplying theta, again, is all this plus he d by de and if you stare closely, what happens? Oh, yeah, I mean, well, yeah, you could, but even more simply, I mean, we have a minus sign and a plus sign, so all this just cancels, giving a zero. Yeah. Okay? So therefore, there are no terms in our, in our perturbed, equation for the temperature perturbation involving just theta without any derivatives on it. And that should make sense because a spatially uniform rescaling of the temperature everywhere is not perturbed, right? I just relabeled what is my temperature. Okay? Good. Okay, good. So we've killed all the unperturbed terms. We've killed all the terms without derivatives on theta. There's a bunch of remaining terms. We're already over time. Okay, let me just write out the answer. Okay, so the terms that are left over will work out to the following. Okay, so in the end, what we'll get is minus e df naught de multiplied by d theta dt plus p hat over I d theta dxi minus h e d theta de plus p hat over a plus d phi dt. Whew. Okay, and so all of this is the left-hand side of our perturbed Boltzmann equation for when we use theta to represent the temperature perturbation. Okay, so since we're out of time, I guess I won't go any further. So just briefly, what I'll mention is that next time we're going to see that this term will be negligible in the regime of interest because Compton scattering doesn't affect the energies of photons very much at these temperatures. Okay, right. Okay, but to show that, first we'll talk about now the right-hand side of this equation, which involves that collision integral. Okay, so we'll stop here, and the next time then we'll pick up now with the right-hand side of our Boltzmann equation for photons. Okay, so then see you next time.